Blog Talk Radio. Join us now for Family Mix Monday with licensed professional counselor, Jaquitra Bryant. Tune in as Jaquitra shows the different dynamics that make up family. Whether you represent the nuclear family, single parent, extended, grandparent, or blended family, Jaquitra has tips and advice designed to strengthen your family structure. Source Nation, here is your host, Jaquitra Bryant.
Good evening, Source Nation. Welcome to SRN Live Television. I'm your host, Jaquitra Bryant, and you're listening live to Family Mix Mondays. We are kicking off a brand new series. I'm super excited. Before we get started with the series of fostering families, as we know, this month is National Foster Family Day, Foster Care Month, and so we want to really shine some light on that. And so before we get started, let me stop and thank our sponsors, who are Zulina Health, Wellness, and Fitness, Paper to Film Productions, Urban Grandstand Digital, Meet My Types Matchmaking, Renovations, New Covenant Praise Worship Center, Urban Grandstand Digital, and Paper to Film Productions. And if you are looking for information to broadcast your show up on our television network, contact Kathy B. at Catherine1971, that's with a K, Catherine1971@gmail.com, or Treci, T-R-E-C-I-E, JeffCoach@gmail.com. That's Catherine with a K, 1971@gmail.com, or TreciJeffCoach@gmail.com to broadcast your show on our television network. Super excited about the new changes and the new moves, and continue to follow SRN Television Network. And so before we get started on our fostering family series, I got some stats that I looked up that I think were pretty in the devastating ballpark, actually. In Florida, it said that there are about 14,000 children in foster care in Florida, and about 750 children waiting for permanent placement without identified families. That means that these kids are probably inside group homes, which group home to group home to group home, and not even at all being adopted or fostered. And that's Florida. In Alabama, 5,000 children are out of home placement, who are in custody of Alabama Department of Human Resources. And of these, approximately 225 to 250 have a plan of adoption where an adopted family has not been identified. So another high number. And in Georgia, it was greater, actually. And that's where I live. And so it was so hard to believe. But 11,000 children in foster care last year, and 2,730 children have been permanently goal of adoption. Out of those, there are 250 who are still available for adoption and looking for permanent homes. And so hopefully this month, it being National Foster Care Month, we're going to move some things and we're going to like shift some stuff, and hopefully that these people, like, we will get home for the children. And so I have a really special guest and author, and there's this amazing woman whose heart is for people within the foster care. And so we have author Spencina Antoinette, and she just released a new book titled The Story of Little David. And she's a unique author that helps children to relate their feelings and understand unanswered questions due to being taken away from their families. The three-chapter book takes a look at welfare, within each chapter starting the same but ending in a variety of ways to give insight to what children tend to go through when they're in a child welfare system. And I just read the stats, so you know this is a large number of people going through these particular things. She has a master's in psychology, bachelor's in early childhood development, and associate degree in science for early childhood education and management. And coming from poverty affected the way she viewed the world system. So she holds this very dear to her heart. And I believe she's also in the midst of starting a new organization, Prayers of Salvation. So she'll begin talking a lot more about that when she joins in live on SRN television with me shortly as we discuss Fostering Families, this new series that we are kicking in. And so I'm super excited about that. And so this is, as we continue to look at this month and look at some of the issues with child welfare and the system, hopefully it will encourage you to look at your state and what you can do about when it comes to fostering a young child or young children. Definitely getting some information this month is going to be a necessity. And so, all right, right. So we are, so I was reading also I was having some technical concerns, and so I was reading about, like, the adoption process, and I was reading about the adoption process and some of the concerns there, well, not the concerns, but the process, and it actually did not seem to be very lengthy, and so it's just a matter of, like, being able to go through the actual process itself when it comes to the adoption parts of it. And so there are some parent support groups that will give you some information about as well. So we have support groups like 1-800-96-ADOPT to find your local parent support group if you are indeed a parent that has adopted or is a parent who is within the foster care system. All right. So let's get started and just, like, we'll just go ahead and go move forward and just talk about some of the concerns when it comes to fostering and the stigma that's centered around fostering children. I myself worked for a group home for years before I got my master's and started doing more clinical work. And I, by the time I got a lot of these children, I noticed that they were kids who had been from foster home, not foster, excuse me, group home to group home to group home. And from group home to group home. And so I noticed that those people were from there. And, the children were from there. And so part of that, in that concern, I noticed that they were very much devastated with the idea of trusting another person. And so when I would come in and just kind of maybe have discussions with them in terms of, like, I don't know, making your bed or washing your face or just, like, leaving your room and leaving your item, the kids would be really, really torn between, like, should I trust this person? Should I leave my stuff? Because they had actually gone through several changes in group homes. And several changes in group homes. And so that was pretty devastating for them. And that makes it hard for them to come in and actually begin trusting other new individuals. And so imagine these kids who you met that are indeed experiencing the home, group home to group home. Unfortunately, that is something that is very much a trend, and no matter what state you're in, that the child most likely is not, that the child indeed, like, this is possibly not their first home that they've gone through. And so imagine that you're trying to move forward and just build a relationship and build a bond, but yet this child is holding on to this bag that has, like, the only piece of information that maybe their mother gave them. And so that makes it really hard for the transition to take its place. And so because of that and years of maybe spending time with their family and friends, children have a really difficult time with adjustment. And so it's very important to have, therefore, therapists involved. It's very important to have social workers involved. It's very important to have other specialists involved that work primarily with adoption and fostering so that they can actually help with transitioning. And so, so they can actually transition. And so try... So they can actually transition. So it makes it really difficult. And even more difficult if they're a teenager. And so, and we can probably understand why, but just in case you can't, most teenagers have actually gone through several homes by this point. Not only have they gone through several homes, they've also gone through, at this point, several homes. They've also gone through several things when it comes to, like, not several homes. They've also gone through several homes. They've gone through several different parents. They've gone through maybe parents saying, I don't want them, and or maybe it was a bullying situation. So many things, and it was so many situations that caused children, especially teens, to be resistant to the new families that are present. And so that makes it very difficult to, that makes it very difficult for them to transition in. And I think a lot of times people may be thinking, like, I'm a bad kid. But think about the journey that this kid has had to actually go through when it comes to just adjusting in. You may be the first foster home, but you may be like the second or third person that they're experiencing. And so of course you're going to have an attitude, correct? Like, you're definitely going to have an attitude if this is like your third or fourth time going through. And so just with this transition, if you are interested, don't be resistant or hesitant to get a young teenager. Don't be hesitant to get a person who's gone from home to home, because that's something that can indeed happen due to the fact of the journey of what the group home and adoption and the foster care system looks like. And so just wanted to kind of give some people a heads up when it comes to, like, adjustment and the concerns there. And so hello, Justina. Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay, good. So tell Source Nation Radio, excuse me, so SRN Live Radio, a little bit more about you and just any new things you have going on.
My name is Ben. I am an entrepreneur and an author. Right now, I write children's books only. Right now, I am starting a company called Prayer of Salvation Learning Center. It's a nonprofit charitable organization, and it is talking about, or we are, sorry, our vision and mission is to help people who are in need, basically. And our mission statement says that we will help stabilize, educate, and inform.
Yes, I'm so excited about that and just excited about, period, this series. I did some research and I noticed that this month is National Foster Care Month. And so I think that's going to be a perfect thing to be able to, like, talk about. And so, Susanna, talk about your own journey. I was reading a little bit in your bio and I noticed that you actually had a journey with the child welfare experience. And so, like, what would you say was, I guess, a scary point for you when it came, like, during this process of being in the system or just learning about the system?
I was never actually in the system myself. I worked as a DCF case manager.
Okay.
And being a case manager, you get exposed to a lot more things. Being on the other side of it, when my mother would get DCF calls on her, versus being on the side where I'm the DCF worker that's going out, it's two different worlds. And the things that these case managers have to do, it's a very hard job. The turmoil they have to deal with, things they have to see. I mean, my first case, when I read the snapshot, was saying a little girl was being raped by her father. So, you know, it's just so heartbreaking. It honestly is so heartbreaking.
Yeah, I remember before I got my license, like in between this, like I was pregnant with my son and I worked for, I did about two different group homes. One was one of the oldest that we have here in Atlanta, Children's Methodist Group Home. And I believe it's closed down because every time I walk, drive past it, it's gone. And then I did another group home that was next to DFAC. So they definitely like would literally, once they would get a kid, we would get them. And so kids were in there from all ranges, and it was a really hard transition for especially like those who were like fresh leaving their parents and not understanding why. And so it makes it really hard to come into another person's family. And so I wanted to talk about that, I guess, what makes this journey for a child so difficult when they're maybe elementary age, that you've seen in your work?
Well, the big thing, I don't know the recent numbers, but the last time I checked, in 2016, there were 600,000 children in foster care placement. Mm-hmm. A large number, nationwide, of course, but it's still a large number. So the worst thing is that when we did our training, DCF would tell us, we are really taking them out of a bad situation and most likely putting them in another bad situation, because just because it's a foster care home doesn't mean it's a loving home. A lot of these children go to other foster care homes and they get molested or neglected or abused just like they did when they were at home. So we can't ensure that they're going to be safe just because they're in foster care. And a lot of children, when they're taken from home, they don't understand why. Nobody's telling them, hey, you're leaving because, you know, mom and dad made some pretty bad choices. They're not saying that. They're basically saying, hey, get all your stuff that you can fit in this one little bag and go. That's it. Get in my car. And so that's very, very disruptive for anybody, for an adult. So for a child, they're just like, what? And they're screaming, and the parents are screaming, and they're crying, and, you know, and then usually the parents are yelling at the worker, and the worker's yelling back, and so it's just a lot of drama, it's a lot of frustration, it's a lot of trauma, and so for a child that young, especially children who cannot speak, you know, they have no understanding of anything. All they know is they're being ripped apart from their family, and they feel like you're the enemy. And then you're the one who has to come and see these, you know, children frequently and try to keep explaining to them what's happening. A lot of children that I have seen, they decide that they're going to be bad at home, at the foster care home or in school, and so they can go back to their home with their parents. But unfortunately, that just gets them moved from foster care home to foster care home, because a lot of foster care parents really don't do it because they love the kids. Some of them do, but some of them don't. Mm-hmm. So they just get rid of the kids. They're like, there's too much to take care of. I can't handle this. And kids in their mind really do think that if they get in enough trouble, they will go back home. Mm-hmm. And that's usually the elementary kids. The bigger kids, like teenage, adolescents, they believe, like, you know, I don't have to listen to you, you're not my mom kind of thing. And so that gets them in a lot of trouble, too. I actually answered a lot of the unanswered questions for elementary and middle school kids in my book, The Story of Little David.
Yeah. And so we'll definitely make sure we talk about that book, because we have to all run and go get it. And so, but yes, Christina, you said some of that stuff that just brought back to my memories of when I was working in those group homes. And so I was the middle person in between the transitions a lot. And so, and this is me before being licensed. So like, this is me like looking at hundreds of kids constantly coming through and then maybe coming back to work and that kid's gone. And then coming back, and here's another kid that has robbed in the middle of the night that the police brought in. And so I think, like, when people do foster care, I don't think they understand that it is trauma in itself to go from home to home, to go throughout the system. And like you said, like, so many things can happen at the other homes that by the time you get this wounded kid, like, it's you really, really have to be very delicate and understanding and mercy, have mercy upon them, oh, my goodness, and just really understand the journey. And I think, like, I don't know what's the process when it comes to training and things like that for the foster care families, but that would be definitely my suggestion when it comes to how to transition a child, looking at their wound.
Right. Well, it varies from state to state. So In Florida, which is where I live, we have classes that you take, and then you have to pass a background and a home study. A home study just basically is your home suitable for a child to live in? And so after they complete all of those things, then they can become a professional parent is what it's called. Okay. So once a parent becomes a professional parent, then they can take however many children can go into their home. Now, some of the rooms, like say if we have a two-bedroom, one of the rooms has like maybe two bunk beds in it. You could put four kids in that, you know, room as long as they all have their own separate room and certain age groups can be in the same room together. So sometimes, you know, sometimes foster parents take on too many kids and then they get overwhelmed. But they do have something called, in Hillsborough County, we call it a yellow jacket. In Polk County, I think it's called a blue book. But it has the children's birth certificates, social security cards, different things like that, doctors, Medicaid cards. And that's supposed to give the foster care parent significant background on the child so that they can know how to interact with the child. And also when placements, which is the people from the organization that calls and say, hey, do you want a child? This is the age group. This is the sex. They are supposed to tell you a little bit of the background of the child at that time.
Yeah, and which would be definitely vital information that I would say a person who really has a caring heart and is just it's a catch-22 with this, I guess, if you will, because they actually will come with a background story. But when you're giving birth to a child, then there's no textbook to that as to how to parent this person. And so it does still have to be some responsibility on the home and the parent when it comes to the environment. And so it's really just an unfortunate journey that kids often go through.
Right. Biggest thing is a lot of times foster care parents want foster care children themselves, so they can't empathize with that child. So they really don't know how to talk to the child, how to handle the child. And a lot of times they just get stressed out and say, I can't do this anymore. And the biggest problem that we have right now is getting people of color to be foster parents. That's any color, you know, from Milano to Hispanic to African American, you know, Jamaican. We need more cultures, more ethnicities to be foster care parents. Because, for example, I had a child that was, he only spoke Spanish, but he had to go into an English-speaking home, and the foster care parent couldn't communicate to the child. So not only is the child not getting, you know, any questions answered, but now the child is probably not getting the needs that, you know, are met.
That's a really big point, because, like, and that's another experience that a child has to go through. It's just such an unfortunate journey. Like I said, like, I was the middle person in between it, so I've never seen the foster side of it. I just know what does the journey look like when they're coming from group home. And we aren't their first group home. I know that's not their first foster home. And so that makes it a really challenging journey. I noticed that you have an organization that, like, you're in the midst of starting. You started. Could you tell me more about that?
Yes. Prayers is starting off as a small daycare center, and we are in the process of buying a building. It's in South Cleveland and on Shepherd Road. And we're going to establish it and turn it into a private school. And then we're going to expand it a little more. And we're going to do scholarships for people who, you know, can't afford daycare, or maybe schools who can't afford private school. We are a charitable organization. So a lot of the funds that will be used will be to expand any future project that has anything to do with Prayer of Salvation. The school will be year-round, and we're doing this to help the families, because a lot of times over the summer, this is when we get the most DCF calls. I know in other places it's called CPS and HRS, but over the summer, this is where most of the abuse occurs, I should say. So let me retract. That's where most of the abuse occurs because the children are at home instead of being in, you know, a healthy environment where they could be less abused. Okay. So usually when school starts back in either August or September, that's when the calls are the highest. Because after summer, this child has been abused all summer long, and now teachers are having to call a lot, you know, and daycare workers. So we're intending for the school to be a year-round school. It is state-based. We're also trying to do a few scholarships, you know, as many as we can afford. So that's where funding comes in from other people. Then we really want to provide better meals than the school system, not, you know, say anything bad about the school system because public and free education in America is a blessing. Mm-hmm. But we do want to provide healthier meals. And then we have something called Redemption Hope for the Homeless, which is going to be a homeless shelter. And we're also going to help local vets who don't have a place to live because affordable housing is really scarce in Florida. So we're just trying to look into finding more ways to fund affordable housing for parents who, you know, have to stay away from their children a lot because mm-hmm. they have to worry about paying bills and they still don't make ends meet at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. That sounds like a great, like, school that's going to be needed and that's going to help with a lot because that does, it sounds like it addresses several issues. Like, it really does. And so I just definitely I'll join you in prayer that, like, it is filled with several kids and they're able to go on and just really be a blessing to a lot of other people. With your book, The Story of Little David, like, first I want to get, like, the inspiration to writing your book. Like, what was the inspiration for that?
Well, my background consists of, I'm right now a mental health therapist. I have been a life coach and counselor for many years. I got my bachelor's in early childhood development and my master's in psychology. So I started out doing therapy with children when I got my bachelor's. I started off working in a daycare when I was 17. So I love children. So that's one big thing. My heart goes out to children. I love children, especially since they're helpless, and if they're not given the opportunities in life, then, you know, they're most likely not going to get it. So I love children. That's my biggest thing. So me working for DCF and then becoming a mental health therapist, I have always been an author, and I've been writing since I was, like, 6 years old. So I'm one day just sitting there saying, okay, it's time for me to write my second book. And so I started writing it, and the story was originally going to be called When I Was Taken From My Mommy. And I really don't know what gave me the idea to write this book, but I can tell you what pushed me to complete it. Because I wrote a manuscript out, and I was like, you know, I just don't like it. It's not enough. Something is missing. And so one day I was working with a client, and my client's story really, really bothered me. And so that pushed me to help him. And I actually wrote this story to help that kid.
Yeah.
And so that's where, you know, all of my education and knowledge came in. I knew exactly what to say and how to answer that particular client's, you know, question. And the story now has hit, I've tried even talking about it, because the story has hit people's hearts
yeah.
in so many ways, especially adults who have never actually dealt with that trauma. I have adult clients that are like, wow, this story, I wish I would have had this when I was a kid. And that's why even if the story isn't significant for you per se, there are 600,000 plus people out there that story would make a big difference to. You know, and I, you know, we all cry when we read it. Me, my partners, the people that I share the book with, we all cry when we read it, but it has three different endings. So it's an ending suitable for each type of situation.
Mm. Oh man, that's oh man. Well, so let's discuss some of it. But we gotta leave some so people can definitely go read it and read it. Is it something that if you do have a foster child in your home that you can read along with your foster child, or is this more so for the parents so they can understand the journey?
Well, I would say if definitely would be for about 6 or 7 year olds to read. They might have a few challenging words, but not many. It would be more of a parent reading it to a child or a teacher reading it to a child. There's no specific place to read it. It's just appropriate. It's a very appropriate book for multiple aspects of life in different places and things like that. But the first chapter is removed and reunited. So the child is removed from the mom and dad and then put back in the same home later on. Then the second chapter is removed and placed with a relative caregiver. And so relative caregivers are people that you are blood related to who can take you in when you've been removed from your parents. And they can keep you with permanent guardianship or, you know, temporary, or they can adopt you if your parents lose their custody rights. And then the third chapter is the child that never goes to a relative, never goes to a non-relative, never goes back home, but does indeed stay in foster care. And I added a little bit extra to it because a lot of the children who are in foster care, they do get bounced around. So I did put that portion into the last chapter.
And I don't know if all of our Source Nation know that a child that's left in foster care, it's not that like, oh, that's it for that person. I don't know if people understand the journey of them going from home to home and then kind of staying in the system. And so could you speak about like that journey of the kid that doesn't get adopted, that kid that doesn't go into the foster care, and what have you seen happens to this kid when they age out of what we call it?
So the age process is the most terrible thing ever. Because these children, when they're in foster care, they're not learning life skills. And that's one thing that I did leave out. Prayer of Salvation will have summer life skills. So they will teach children how to wash, how to cook, how to all these different types of things. Because when they're in foster care, some of them don't even learn how to brush their teeth, how to wash their hands, how to wipe themselves. It's really bad. So by the time they turn 18, they are no longer the state problem, and they're booted out. And there aren't very many programs out there that will take an adult and let them stay. So a lot of these children, they end up homeless. Well, adults, they end up homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if by any chance they have gotten adopted, I don't know if it's still current, but they had adoption funds, and they now have increased the benefits of scholarships to where the children who get adopted can go to college up until the age of 28 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really good thing for them to get adopted versus being in foster care. But right now, we really, really, really need foster care parents.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was reading off some statistics. I did Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. And it was I think thousands were in the system, and there's still hundreds that were out that needed foster care. And so I think, like, because of all the stuff, like, with the journey of it and people not understanding what this looks like for the child, and maybe hearing some bad things that the child is going to come in and be disobedient and unruly, which may be true inside of the home. But given the situation, that's why you need the village approaching a constant assistant. And so I want to speak more about the child, like, with your first chapter about removed and reunited, and that child that may indeed go to a foster home in between being back reunited. What are some common things that you may have seen when it comes to trying to transition back into homes, and then kind of you went through the journey of foster care that may be helpful for some of our families who are interested in maybe fostering some children with the hope that they do reunite with their families?
Well, I want to say this. Sound like fostering is because a lot of the children aren't bad at all. They're not going to misbehave. They're not going to be disruptive. Some of them might, if they're younger, they might cry. They say, I miss my mom or whatever. But that's, to be expected. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, not all of them are going to act that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you do get a stipend, too. You do get paid to take care of these children. So it's not like you're going to be put in a financial hardship for taking care of these children. It actually costs the state more money to pay for a foster care parent than it does for them to actually maybe give some government assistance to the families to keep the home stable. So they really, really are trying to keep families together because it actually costs them less money. Because, you know, the child in foster care gets food stamps, Medicaid, you know, then they get the stipend for the foster parent. So, you know, it's very helpful, I guess you could say, for the foster care parent to not just take in some random child and then have to deal with all their problems and the financial burden too. So not all of them are going to be, you know, peers.
Yeah.
But from what I have seen, children that are taken from their parents, the very first thing that they go through is, you know, trying to figure out why am I being taken away, what's going on. And then the next thing they go to thinking is somehow it was their fault. Mm-hmm. They are really, really adamant about it being them being the ones blamed when really it has nothing to do with them. And then going to foster care home, you know, it's kind of like you teach children as they're growing up, don't talk to strangers, but then you get a stranger to come and take them from their house, and then you take them to another stranger's house, and these kids are terrified, you know, they're having nightmares, and they don't know what to think, you know. You know, a lot of kids feel like they're abducted, you know, like somebody has just stolen me, and, you know, especially with all these movies out, like Taken, and
right. They
you know, I just get taken away, you know, so their imaginations are really, like, big and explosive at these ages, and they really feel like they've been abducted, like somebody has just, you know, taken them from their mom and dad, and they're never going to see them again. You know, some of them do think they're going to be dead the next day. You know, they never know. They really do think, you know, should I trust this person? Especially if the foster care parent is not the nicest, then they really feel like, oh, I'm going to die. You know, I have to run away. And some of them do. They try to run away and things like that. And then it goes on to, you know, like I said, some of them try to get away, and then if they do get away, they go to another foster care home, and they're not happy about it because then they're kind of in shock that they're not going back their home, just to another foster care home. And so, you know, after a while of being passed around, then they start to lose self-worth, and they begin to feel like, I'm not good enough, nobody loves me. And all the negative thoughts that they hear, especially when they are making bad choices, they hear words like, oh, you're a bad kid, oh, you're stupid, oh, I can't stand you, get away from me. And these kids take those words and they believe it. They believe everything you say. At this age, they're so gullible. They can't see, you know, their strength. They can't understand the beauty that they have within themselves. They don't know anything about self, you know, positive self-worth. They don't know anything about positive self-talk. They don't know anything about, you know, mind over mood. They don't understand those kind of cognitive ways of thinking, the distortions that they're having. So they're really just scared and afraid, and they're trying to do that defense mechanism, either flight or fight. And so if they're not fighting, they're trying to run away, you know. But there are those foster care parents that know exactly what love looks like, and those parents that can give them love and give them reassurance and let them know, hey, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to help you. Right now, you can't go back home to mommy, but you can talk to mommy on the phone. You can Skype mommy. You'll have visitation with the case manager and your mom. You'll see mom at court, whatever the case may be. And then when they get to the point where they haven't seen mom or dad for a while, and then they go and see them, and then they come back home to the foster care home, then they kind of are acting a little weird, not the same as they have been. Because once you get a child on a schedule, they start acting accordingly. But once they have a disruption or any small change in their life, then they begin to kind of act a little bit disruptive. Even with, you know, older children who have been in with their family their whole life, you know, they might move from an apartment to a house, and you'll see them acting strange a little bit, because any change in anybody's life does cause, even if it is just minor to severe trauma, it causes a type of trauma.
Mm-hmm. What about, as you're speaking, I was thinking about siblings. And so within, like, the story of little David, do you speak of like siblings that possibly may get split up or are in there with you, or I guess foster parents taking on both siblings to help with it?
Well, that is the actual question that I did not put in the book. The reason I didn't is because I didn't want the book to be too long.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be friendly. But that is actually the largest epidemic we have right now, is that all the children are not being placed with their siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them, and I guarantee the number is somewhere like 65 to 75%, are being split up from their siblings. We really need foster care parents that can take on sibling groups. So let's just say I'm a case manager and I have 20 cases. Out of all 20 cases, I only have two that aren't sibling cases.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these cases are in foster homes. But I have to go now, like, six different homes to go get six different children. And that's a lot on the case manager. That's a lot on the children. I've seen instances where, even just with my own cases, where I've had to drive 2 hours out to go get one child, and then another half hour to go get another child, and then another 2 hours to go to the meeting. And we would be up anywhere from 4 o'clock in the morning to, you know, back home 10 o'clock at night. So when I say case management is a hard job, it's a hard job. And these children, they kind of get the worst end of it, because while we're trying to stabilize them and trying to keep them with their families and their siblings, it doesn't quite work that way. They do hold something called sibling separation staffing. They want you to basically, they want the judge and the people that's in charge of the case to be able to say that it's a good idea and there's no other choice but to separate the children in these instances. Unfortunately, they don't want to keep them separated, but if they have no other choice, that is what they do. So they hold the staffing with the foster parent, with the parent, with, you know, whoever is in charge of the case, and they talk about all the recommendations and if this child can still see the sibling. And a lot of times they work it out to where foster care parents will meet with other foster care parents to keep the siblings together.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times that does not happen. A lot of times foster care parents want to be confidential.
That is so sad, that journey. Because imagine, like, you know, you're already being removed from home, so you don't understand. And then now, like, you don't get, like, the only one person to go with you throughout the journey. And so, yeah, very, very sad. It's a very sad process with it. You spoke briefly about, like, some of the process of the stipends and then the state trying to give you financial support. Does this vary from state to state, or is this particularly, is this like a across the state board, that each parent will get some type of stipend and some type of support when they do indeed foster a kid?
Well, the funds are different from state to state.
Okay.
So Florida is going to be different from Georgia. Georgia is going to be different from California. But I can say that the amount of the stipend will be very close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they won't be too far different.
And what about the difference between foster and adoption? And so perhaps maybe there's some families that are interested in it and they just want to provide, like, the immediate support and the immediate stability. But what would be a difference between a person fostering and a person adopting?
Well, adoption is your child. It is definitely your baby. You can give that baby your last name. Nobody in the world has to know that that baby is not your baby. That baby now can call you mom or dad or as the case may be. But it's a little different if the child is older and stuff, because you can even adopt a child when they're 18 years old. But it's a difference when they're adopting, because, like I said, they get scholarship funds. They get even a little stipend when they turn 18. I'm not sure if that's still applicable now, but I know it was a couple years back. They would get a little stipend when they turn 18 in college. So the benefit for the child is way better than them being in foster care. When a child ages out in foster care, they have nowhere to go. Where when a child is adopted, they can stay at home with their parents if they want, or go off to college, and they'll still have that support. But when they age out from foster care, they can't go back to the foster care home, and they don't have that support. So now they're really left out there alone. But adoption is better for the child. I wouldn't say it's necessarily better for the person, because a foster care family could keep a child until they're 18. But, you know, you could do that with adoption too. It just depends on, you know, the situation. Every situation varies. One's different from the other.
So with that being said, so foster care families can keep the child or children for an extended time and then maybe look into adopting the child or children?
Oh, yes. A foster parent can adopt, but this is one thing they tell you. Don't become a foster care parent just because you want to adopt. They think it's better to go into adoption, but a lot of people don't see that. What happens is a foster care parent, especially the good one, will fall in love with this child in their home, and they won't want them to go. So now the foster care parent and or their children, because, you know, a lot of foster care parents have their own children, have become attached to this kid, and the kid has become attached to them, and then they don't even get to see him anymore. Now, the parents could allow them to see him, but in some cases, you know, the kids could have originally lived in Puerto Rico or Montana, and you're not going to see a kid, you know, that was in Florida all the way in Montana. So, you know, just that constant being separated from bonds is really hard. So foster care parents have to know how to be strong in that area and kind of take it as, I helped this child in a time where they needed my help, and that's the blessing that I get out of it. And I can't be, you know, too upset about the fact that I won't get to see them again. You have to understand that that's what comes with the responsibility of being a foster care parent. So, yeah, that's a really tough call right there, because depending too, I've even seen children get removed from foster care parents. So they could keep them extended amounts of time, but that doesn't mean that they would necessarily stay there.
I remember. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Maybe they'll ask you, like, if you want to take another child and switch it out for another child. But most foster care parents, they keep the child that they get.
I remember when I was growing up, and the lady across the street, she, these are people that we grew up with years. So I know, like, the children that she birthed. And so I remember while we were growing up, all of a sudden some little kids just showed up. And I was, like, really confused, because at this time I'm, like, in high school, and I'm like, who are all the kids that are, like, coming to y'all's house? And then her mom had became a foster mom, like, as her children were growing up. And I watched, like, gosh, she may have been probably dozens of children come through her house. And one particular one she was able to maintain and adopt. And so I don't remember, like, what was the difference between him and the fact that the other ones had to transition and go. Maybe they went back to their, I think some may have went back to their homes after their parents, like, worked a parent plan. It was just different ones. But there's one that she ended up adopting. And even still to this day, we're in our, like, mid-30s. I can go home, and there are some more little kids that she's, like, still fostering. And so that's something. And so I always wonder, I'm like, well, is there a system that says this is a good parent's home to foster the children through? Because once you see a lot of them come through. So I wondered that, because I was like, man.
That's very usual. They do end up with a lot of kids. A lot of kids do go home, or they get a permanent placement with a relative or a close friend of the family. Unfortunately, when parents lose their rights, called a TPR. So when they lose rights to the child, they're no longer able to come around the child. They, like, will, like, tell the parent that basically, like, you have, like, a little no contact order. You can't even see the child anymore. You have no rights to the medical records, birth certificates, anything. So it's kind of like the child is just being ripped away from them, like they never, you know, existed to you ever. And under that condition is the only time where a foster care parent can actually adopt the child. They have to have, the parent have to have their rights completely taken away.
Yeah. I think the young man, because he still, I think he went on and went to college and everything, and so did all her kids. But I think his mom had a history of drugs, and I guess she just never kind of got clean with it. Because like I said, I've seen other children come through the home, and there was never, there are two kids that actually fully got adopted by her that were originally foster kids when we were like high school kids. And so now there are still some smaller ones. I don't know if she is looking to adopt anymore since everyone that she adopted is actually grown and out of the house. Or if she's just interested in kind of fostering at this point and continuing it. But I do, oh, those particular ones, their families had drug history related.
That is the most common reason why children are removed, and you're not going to believe the first one, is domestic violence and then drugs. So those are really big epidemics in the United States because usually the children are being taken. So many children are drug babies. It's not even funny. But they're all being taken away because of drugs, which the drugs do end up assisting to some type of neglect or abuse. So they can't take children away unless they're in some kind of imminent danger. They have to be in immediate danger for them to take the child. And so if they see that your protective capacities are diminished, they will take your child. They will, you know, let's say, for example, you know, you're fighting with another adult, you know, around the corner, and your child is a baby crawling on the floor, and you guys are like rolling over onto the child. That's when the child is in immediate danger. So sometimes parents look at it like, well, all I did was get in a fight, and you know, my child shouldn't have been taken away. But they don't understand that, you know, if the child is in immediate danger in their fight. And so they have to be very much justified in the reason that they take your children, or they won't take them because it could cost them their job.
And I remember I used to work for a prison system, and a lot of people got child cruelty, and they didn't understand because they were just like, well, my child was just on the couch, or and I was outside, and I got in a fight. And so that's even areas that I've seen children get placed in foster homes or group homes due to the parent goes to jail due to, like, things like that, like you're saying, like, and it becomes a child cruelty case. And so I remember when I first worked at prisons, my mindset also always went to child cruelty. Oh, my goodness, they must have been beating the child. But it was a domestic case. It was a fight in front of the child.
Right. So that's why they have implemented when people have babies now, they want them to take parenting classes. And I don't know if they're doing that nationwide yet, but they have done it in a few places where they're trying to get parents to take parenting classes because they want the children to grow up in healthy environments. And I think to myself, you know, I got my bachelor's in early childhood development. I had to take, like, parenting and all these different kind of ways to teach kids and how to understand kids. And that's the only thing that contributed me to being a good mother because my mom worked all the time. So me and my siblings were latchkey kids. We were raising each other. I had no clue how to be a parent when I had my first child. So if I hadn't taking those courses, I think to myself every day, how would I have been a good mother? I would have not been a good mother if I didn't have that education behind it. And, you know, and it proves, you know, when your child does certain things a different way or you can handle a certain situation. And just because a kid turns out a certain way doesn't mean that you did bad parenting. It's just when they become a certain age and they feel like they can do whatever they want to do, then it's on them. But, you know, I just can't imagine if I did not have that education behind me and then the experience working in daycares as a child until my, you know, mid-20s, how would I have known how to deal with children appropriately?
So true, so true. I'm going to look into that because they need it, especially with people just kind of like, you know, hey, I think I want a child, someone to love, and not knowing what it looks like to really bring a child into the world and the necessities of care and the environment and the social piece, the psychological pieces, all that. I'm with you. Like, I've witnessed my parents, like, my dad be physically abusive to my mom. And so I saw marriage, but, like, when I became a mom, I think what saved me to be a certain type of mom was the fact that I was getting my master's in the midst of being pregnant and raising a little infant. And so I'm reading everything that happens to him, what will happen to him developmentally, and I'm understanding the psychological of a person's environment. And I think that's something that was really helpful to me. And so if I probably wouldn't have got my master's in this, then I probably would have been repeating some cycles.
Right. It's very important to break the patterns in our lives. And unfortunately, sometimes we don't, and we end up in the same situations over and over.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a bunch of people say, and it's not the actual definition, but the definition of insanity is to do the same things over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell my clients, when they're making poor decisions, I say, you're like that little mouse in the box. And they want to go get the cheese, but there's a little buzzer that's shocking them. And I'm like, you're just that little mouse.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why don't you think differently? Why don't you walk around and get the cheese?
Right.
Sometimes, you know, we do make the same old mistakes. And a lot of times when we have bad habits, it's really hard to break. So I think having a support system is the biggest thing. And with fostering, you do have a support system. You have the case manager. You have the company that you are, you know, getting the children from. You have other foster care parents if you choose to buddy up with them. And then a lot of times we tell them to keep the children active, you know, put them in tutoring, put them in sports. You know, if you have a church home, take them to church, take them to mentoring programs like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, whom also really need volunteers right now,
they
by the way.
Georgia too.
So, you know, I just think that the more we give back, the better off we are in the future, because the children are our future. And if our children have lived chaotic lives, our future is going to be chaotic.
So true. My God, so true. Yep. Georgia needs Big Brothers and Sisters too. My son is a little and his big is amazing. But like I heard there's like 300 kids on the wait list. In Georgia. So, yeah.
Yes. I don't know the exact number here, but I know in my county, they're like it. So my son was on the wait list for 5 years.
What?
When he was like 5 years old. He was on the wait list for 5 years. And we ended up moving to another county, so he never did get one. But by then, I had got married, and he didn't need one.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, my son, we were only on there for, like, 3 months, and we just end up compromising, like, moving it around. Like, his big is a little younger than my age said, and his big agreed to come a little further out. And so I was like, we'll take it. We're not going back on that wait list. And so, well, so as we just wrap up a little bit, Cynthia, I want you to just tell more anything else about the book, where they can purchase the book, any other things that we didn't cover that you feel like families who are interested. Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask. Is fostering, if you're a single parent or married, it's still you're still able to foster, correct? It doesn't matter, like, single or married.
You can foster if you're in the LGBT community. Doesn't matter. You can be any ethnicity, any race, any age over the age of 18. They do not discriminate whatsoever.
Okay.
They don't care what religion you are, what sex you are. If you're married, divorced, they do not care.
That's good. Therefore, like, it's really just a caring heart and having the space to be able to kind of guide this child. So that's going to be good. So tell anything else that you want about, like, your book or any particular points in there, how they can get the book, how they can get in touch with you for any further questions.
Well, anybody that wants to meet can go to our website, www.prayerofsalvationinc.com. The book is for sale on Google Play Books, which is on the Google Play Store. But instead of games, you have to hit the Books app, and then you have to type in the title and my name. Amazon, same thing, the title and my name, The Story of Little David, Cynthia Antoinette. Also, you can just type in my name, and you'll see all my books, because I have two books out right now, The Story of Little David and Where the Watermelons Grow.
Oh, I love the title. I love the title. And so definitely I wish you well with the books, and hopefully this is something that continues to bless people's lives and really gather an understanding of what this journey looks like from the inside. And so I think that will help. And so I just want to remind everyone that, again, May is National Foster Care Month, so maybe look inside of your county or inside of your state and see ways that you can get involved and also see what local organizations might be having something so you can grab some more information. And so, again, if you are interested in looking to broadcast your show on television with SRN Live now, contact Kathy B. at Katherine1971@gmail.com or Tracy Jeffcoat Tracy Jeffcoat@gmail.com if you're interested. Mm-hmm. And so, again, thank our sponsors who've made our show possible, Urban Grants and Digital, MFI's Matchmaking, Renovations, New Covenant Praise Worship Center, Zulina Health and Wellness, and we just really, Blend to Blend Juice Bar Boutique, and we just really thank you again. And so we're going to continue our series next with foster families and just really just getting a lot of people involved. And so, Zulina, thank you so much for just joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Okay, have a good evening.
You too.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye. Okay, it stopped. It's not live anymore. Okay. Tracy, are you on? Oh, I forgot to hang up the phone.